You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you could mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for June 6, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from way, way outside the Laura Logan Perpetual Employment Project, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
She's on the payroll again.
Yeah, I don't think she was ever off the payroll, friend.
Probably not off. She was just on paid leave while people remembered why they were mad at her. And then now that people have forgotten why she was a bad journalist.
She made up a whole fucking story about Benghazi based on a guy who lied and then ran it. And the guy was publishing a book based on it, and CBS owned the publishing company that he was going to. It was a whole
thing.
It was a whole thing that was just bad on lots of levels. And it turned out it was all made up.
Mm-hmm.
It was all played right into the right wing Benghazi machine. It was wholly fictional. And as I noted on my blog today, as a lot of people have, Dan Rather, Keith Olbermann, Martin Bashir, Alec Baldwin, Phil Donahue are all laughing their ass off somewhere. Because there are no standards. If you play to the right wing, there are no standards. There's no amount of lying you can't get away with. Yeah. So, Laura Logan, I read a statistic. I think it was Heather from Crooks and Liars has a little story up today that some of the long-term dislocated workers are gradually filtering back into the workforce, which is a good thing. But I had no idea Laura Logan would be among
would
those
be
statistics.
One of the very first to be rehired, yeah.
Actually, yeah. I lie. I got this story wrong.
You did.
I did.
You did. You got this wrong. You said she'd be back in a month.
I'm man enough to admit that I got it wrong, because the standard by which all journalists who screw up in favor of conservative narrative is 1 month.
And that's named after?
Mark Halperin.
It's a Halperin unit.
Yeah.
Yes, the Halperin unit is 1 month.
It's 30 days. Or you could alternately say Newt Gingrich, because Newt Gingrich.
Yeah, you could.
Newt Gingrich, David Gregory has personally rehabilitated Newt Gingrich's career. I
Dozens
can't count
people.
How many
yeah.
times.
Yeah.
Newt Gingrich goes on the air, says something incredibly racist, false, ridiculous, inflammatory,
but
absurd.
Anyway, I think Halperin's a better name for it.
Yeah, full Halperin, because Halperin, went on the air.
30 days.
Uh-huh.
And you're off Morning Joe for 30 days.
And then exactly.
Calling the president a dick.
Exactly. And exactly 30 days later, you're back on. Nobody says nothing about it. Because you've done your time.
And that's, Laura Logan had to do 6 Halperins.
She had to do 6 full Halperins because she's a chick, you know.
I don't think that's it. I don't think it's because she's a chick. I think it's because her thing was so huge and involved the network's investments.
And they
really had to let strategic forgettery take over for a while.
Yeah. But Alec Baldwin was fired for throwing a homophobic slur off the job on the street at a paparazzi who was stalking his kids.
Yep.
Boom, he's gone. Phil Donahue was fired for being liberal.
Yep.
You know? And the list goes on. If you are on the left, your entire career hangs by a thread.
Mm-hmm.
Do one thing wrong, or even if someone perceives it as wrong, do over the course of your entire career one thing that's as awful as Rush Limbaugh does or Sean Hannity does every single day as a matter of their job, and you're gone.
Yep. By the way, Karen Finney's show Disrupt has been canceled.
Oh, really?
But she's not off the network. Disrupt, for those of you who don't know, is on Sunday afternoons, which is a horrible time slot.
Yeah.
And Karen Finney's an MSNBC contributor, and she still will be, and they'll try again, I'm sure. But it's nice that they're trying to give women, African-American women particularly, their own shows and make something of it. And I'm sure that we haven't seen the last of Karen Finney in the host chair.
And I would love to see the Blue Gal and Driftglass show, of course. But
we're not going to move to New York City.
No.
Forget it.
No.
All right. Let's talk about we got some great letters this week about the Bo Bergdahl issue.
Yeah.
And I'd like to read one and you read the second one. And I'm going to keep this person completely anonymous because he is connected to the military and it's not Petraeus.
Yeah.
One of our military listeners, not Petraeus, writes to us and says...
His pseudonym is Poland Cowell, so...
No, it's not.
Just so you know.
Every reaction to the Bergdahl deal is knee-jerk, pro and con. I completely agree with the president's statement about not leaving troops behind with no conditions attached, but I also agree with people who say, fuck this deserter. Reading the New York Times article is troubling. It seems that Sergeant Bergdahl used to gaze at the mountains around them and say he wondered if he could get to China from there. He is noted to have been an avid reader. I would bet that Tim O'Brien was among his works read. Specifically, going after Cacciato. Is that how you say that?
I believe so.
Yeah. Either way, the dust needs to settle. My initial reaction is that the Republicans criticized this deal way too early to have any validity. If he is for it, we're against it. My second reaction is that this guy is a dirtbag based on his squad members' testimonies. I hope I am wrong.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and then you read the next letter.
Listener Sean wrote us.
Not Hannity.
Not Hannity. Sean Hannity writes us all the time, I will say.
No, he does not.
He's indignant. He wants to get on the air. He wants to break into a new market. And we tell him no. Frankly, no. My rule is I'm not going to engage with people like that at all.
Well, you know what? You know what? Sean Hannity and Grover Norquist are always wanting equal time.
Yeah. Forget it.
Why don't they get equal time to us, Driftglass? I'd be happy with that.
You killed the fairness doctor. Now
I would be happy if Sean Hannity had equal time to me in our in our world of media.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Citizens United. I keep waiting for those big Soros checks to start showing up. But all right. So Sean, not Hannity, writes us about Bo Bergdahl. Jesus fucking Christ. I'm watching this Bergdahl meme du jour break out on the right. That's fucking insane. It's the same shit coming from the Benghazi witch hunts, and it's, once again, Republican revisionism at its best. If you insert X into the equation, this is the same bullshit you're going to get from the right. Is Bergdahl a, quote, deserter, unquote? That decision is not up to me to make. He's an American held captive thousands of miles away from me, and we have an obligation to bring him back home. The GOP, on the other hand, would have wanted him to die or have him executed unless the person who brought him home had an R next to his name on the ballot box. I guess that point is too easy to make. But it is what it is, a broken record player. Shall we forget about the propaganda around Jessica Lynch and Pat Tillman? Shall we forget about the United States executed Japanese generals for waterboarding American citizens during World War II? Shall we forget that Ronald fucking Reagan broke the law with Iran-Contra? The last point I would like to make about this meme du jour is that this came from the black man. If the black man found a cure for cancer or gave dying children gifts they wanted on Christmas morning, the GOP would still be losing their fucking minds. I wasn't politically aware of things when Clinton was president, probably because I was in the second grade when he got reelected. But in my view, the obstructionism has everything to do with the color of his skin. I guess the largest issue I've had with Obama in his first term was still offering his hand to these people time and time again when everyone in the world knew Republicans wouldn't give him anything. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Tom Ricks on Twitter had a nice comment, too, regarding Bergdahl. If we're trying people for causing the deaths of soldiers, I know a lot of people more culpable than a depressed private.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I realize the importance of repeating this. It's like, I suppose, the Irish transcribing books during the Dark Ages.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have any notion that the Dark Ages might ever end, but there's something inherently good or virtuous about the act of pretending to save civilization,
mm-hmm.
trying at least.
Yep.
But it is, at this point, so ridiculously obvious that the Republican Party is just a meat bag of reflexes.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what Barack mm-hmm. Obama does, they're against it.
Right.
No matter what happens, it's impeachable. No matter what he says, it's the wrong thing to do. No matter what action he takes, he's either weakening the United States because he wants to hand us over to a foreign power because he hates the military. I heard this all on the Rush Limbaugh show yesterday, by the way. Or he's a malevolent tyrant who wants to destroy America. He's all powerful and his will is what we should fear because he's coming for our guns and to gay up our kids. That same sentence can come out of crazy Uncle Liberty's mouth at the same time as the previous one, and he doesn't ever notice the difference. So there isn't any point in trying to reason with people who have abandoned reason. The only thing you can do is, like any disease, which I consider conservatism to be a pathogen in the atmosphere, is you contain it until the people who have it die off,
mm-hmm.
And don't let it spread. But I would like to point out what Junior Dude thought of this.
Yeah.
Which was,
our 15-year-old son, who has lots of ideas about, he's going to go work for the State Department.
He's currently banging around on the porch. So if you hear some thumpa-thumpa and some muttered voices.
Teenage boys.
He and a fellow simian
gorilla
are out on the porch, I assume, cracking coconuts open with their heads.
Yeah.
He's a great guy, and his friend's awesome. But he asked us what we thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
And what we told him was, it's okay to be torn over things.
Yeah.
It's okay to be of two minds about things. It's perfectly reasonable, for example, to think that Barack Obama, his policy on drones is bad, but that overthrowing the Obama administration and replacing it with President McCain would be infinitely worse. It's okay to think those two things at once.
At the same time.
And to believe them both, because you know what? They're both true. And the idea that two equally problematic, thorny things might be true at the same time counsels for caution. You proceed carefully and thoughtfully in what you're going to do next and the next and the next thing after that, which is something that if you only live for bumper stickers, if you only mouth right-wing talking points.
If it's all about gaining points against the other side.
And
then, and when it is, then you can have one day on your blog, Barack Obama has abandoned an American overseas with Bergdahl. And this, you know, November 2013, there was a blog post on a right-wing blog saying that just that.
Yes.
And then this week, you know, how dare, just goes to figure that Barack Obama would spend American lives getting this deserter back to the United States.
Yeah.
Instead of executing him.
And when you never have to worry about paying the price for what you said yesterday, this is what you get. When you come to a place where your political strategy is based on just shifting, radically shifting what you profess deeply and passionately to believe 180 degrees, depending on what Roger Ailes' mood is in today, but what Frank Luntz says you should think, you end up getting stuck by the fact that actually, what with the new modern technology and all, we can record what you said and play it back. So you
But apparently Drudge can say one thing on Thursday and one and a different thing on Friday. And everyone just says, oh, yeah, that's right.
So what you need is a enveloping strategy of never talking about the past and never listening to anyone who says, yeah, but didn't you say something different yesterday? And just, you know, this is a little reminder, a little throwback to Mad Men. Here we go. Robert Morse. Who famously is Bertram Cooper. And everybody made a big deal about the fact that he was, and rightly so, that he was the centerpiece of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. But people forget he was also Walter Matthau's mentor in The Guide for the Married Man.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Deny it.
And there's this wonderful scene. I found the YouTube of it. And I used this as a theme 2005, 2006, years ago, which was, what if you get caught by your wife red-handed in bed with so-and-so? And I've seen this theme pop up like on other places years later. So I feel like I was the pioneer of relating this to republicanism. But it's what happens if your wife walks in on you in bed with another woman? The answer is deny. And every time Walter Matthau raises an objection, he says, deny, deny, deny. Just keep denying it until it goes away.
And then they show Joey Bishop doing exactly that. What woman? She's right there.
Where?
Here.
What woman? What are you talking about? The two of you. Who are you talking about? And he just puts his clothes back on, and she puts her clothes back on, and they and he walks and sits down and gets a drink. And her last question is, what do you want for dinner?
Yeah, she gives up.
But if you just never break character, if you just deny everything constantly and do it in a nice, fascistic, lockstep, obedient to the dear leader approach, you'll win.
And you know what I call people who say one thing yesterday and something different today with no consequences? I call them a deserter.
Yeah.
Deserters are everyone on Fox News who said Fox rocks in Iraq and then never mentions that there were no WMDs and we were not greeted as liberators.
And who now brings back the guy who was saying Fox rocks.
Exactly.
Oliver North.
Like Oliver North to criticize the president.
Because no one remembers on the right that Oliver North is a traitor and a war criminal and should be in prison.
Deserters are also every congressman who voted to cut the VA. And wants to privatize the VA and yet criticizes the president for not enough support of the VA. And finally, if I may, I'd like to go on a brief aside about one of my favorite deserters.
Yes.
Liz Cheney.
Yeah.
A mother and a patriot.
She is both a mother and a patriot.
She's a mother and a patriot. Her all-important Defense of America think tank, Keep America Safe, which was co-founded by, you know who?
If you gave me five names to pick from.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the usual.
It's Bill Kristol.
Bill Kristol, okay.
Bill Kristol and Liz Cheney co-founded Keep America Safe.
Uh-huh.
It has not only been disbanded, it has been scrubbed from the internet.
Yeah, it's gone. It has disappeared.
There's no Twitter stream. There's no website. The last time the Wayback Machine can find anything about a website for Keep America Safe is early 2013.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I looked up a little bit about this, and we're going to go on a side about Keep America Safe.
No, this ties in very nicely with the theme of
really
forgetting.
Does. In 2009, Scott Horton of Harper's Magazine, I'm reading this from the Wikipedia page for Keep America Safe. Harper's Magazine questioned the purpose of Liz Cheney and Bill Kristol forming Keep America Safe.
Uh-huh.
He wrote that the advocacy page of their website has an absolute obsession with one issue.
Uh-huh.
A criminal probe into the origins of the torture program by the Justice Department.
Uh-huh.
The whole Keep America Safe campaign is geared to making the point that the torture program that Dick Cheney approved.
Daddy
approved. And that that people now question may have crossed the threshold into criminal conduct.
War crimes? Yeah.
Those war crimes were perfectly legitimate policy alternatives.
Right.
And the whole point of Keep America Safe is torture is a legitimate policy alternative. Therefore, it cannot be criminally investigated.
When Dick Cheney does it.
Yep. Yeah. So Keep America Safe was largely dedicated to keeping Dick Cheney out of jail and out of investigations for criminal misconduct. So then I found out that from the same page that there's a guy named Melvin Sembler, and that's his real name, Sembler.
Uh-huh.
He is a Florida real estate developer and multimillionaire, very pro-Israel lobby, and he's a longtime friend of Dick Cheney.
So far, nothing shocking me.
And George W. Bush, actually, he gave so much money to Republicans that he, you know what he did? He got to be ambassador to Italy.
Oh, that's awesome.
His daughter-in-law was appointed by George W. Bush to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting Executive Board.
Of course, because you got to have both sides there.
Both sides. All right.
It's a disease.
There's more. Uh-huh. Sembler was among prominent conservatives funding Freedom's Watch. Do you remember Freedom's Watch?
I bought one of those Freedom's Watches.
Oh, no.
You know what?
What?
It stopped on January 2nd, 2009. And it's never worked since.
Never worked again.
Oh, no, it's
January
weird.
January 20th, 2009, it just stopped.
It's weird, yeah.
Freedom's Watch was a multimillion-dollar advertising campaign to urge members of Congress who may be wavering in their support for the war in Iraq not to cut and run.
Yeah.
And you know who, along with Melvin Sembler, funded that group?
Oh.
Sheldon Adelson.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Also, Sembler was Mitt Romney's national finance co-chairman.
Wow.
And executive director of Scooter Libby's Legal Defense Fund.
Wow. There's a hot tub I never want to be in.
Sembler also helped finance the 2000 Florida election recount.
Wow. Wow.
The efforts to fight, I should say, the Florida election recount.
Again, nothing you have said surprises me at all.
Yeah, amazing. And he was the one that put the money together to give Liz Cheney a salary and an office in Washington, D.C.
To fight against getting her daddy prosecuted.
Getting her daddy investigated for war crimes.
Being a war criminal.
Yep.
A proud war criminal.
Yep.
And if you flip on the Rush Limbaugh show on any given day, I flipped on one of his little dick birds, one of his little stand-in clones, was just singing, lavishing Dick Cheney with praise. One of the greatest men he's ever met, the greatest human being, a genius, a foreign policy genius, on and on and on and on. Because the Iraq War never happened, Blue Gal.
Yep.
The only thing that happened was we were attacked at some point on 9/11. And then a bunch of stuff happened, and Dick Cheney kept us safe from bad people, and then Barack Obama took over, ruined everything. That's it. That is Republican history for the last decade and a half. And you can't fight against that as if you were fighting with normal, sane people. Yeah. Because you can't engage someone who simply doesn't acknowledge the past ever happened, or what they said yesterday came out of their fucking mouths. You can't fight people like that as you would rational, sentient human beings, because you're fighting essentially brainwashed slugs who will just repeat whatever lie tomorrow they're told to repeat tomorrow.
What woman?
Yeah.
Where? Yeah. How?
And the thing about the entire process of turning the Republican Party and the American conservative movement into this meat bag reflex that just responds to whatever Roger Ailes zaps through it today, is that their response to everything now is entirely predictable.
Yes.
This is why I shrug my shoulders at most of what I see on MSNBC or most of what I hear on liberal. Oh, of course they're saying that. Of course they're doing that. That's who they are now. They are the armature. They are the bionic arm with no brain of its own of a handful of elite fascist billionaires who are taking over our country. And they have no trouble doing that or being that. There's no reflection. There's no internal knowledge. There's no self-awareness at all. And it isn't just the pig people, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Go right up to the top, the elite conservative intellectuals. Go to David Brooks. Ask him what happened in Iraq, and he'll run away from you as fast as his little legs can carry him. Iraq never happened. It didn't. We learned some lessons.
He even said that this week in his column.
He pretty much, last week.
Oh, there's kind of a hangover of Iraq, but really. Yeah.
He was desperate to quote Robert Kagan, one of the 900 Kagan babies who were part of the Project for a New American Century, who helped get us into Iraq, and who David Brooks is still insisting is just a fucking genius.
Yeah.
The fact that he's gotten everything horribly wrong doesn't mean he abandons any of it. He just patiently keeps writing as if it never happened. Deny, deny, deny. And eventually, it never happened. And you can take out all your old friends and all your old columns and all your old connections and the fact that Bill Kristol used to be your boss, and all is forgiven. And you can go right back to writing about how America needs to be out there kicking ass and taking names.
And you called Iraq America's Tiananmen Square. What do you mean that?
Well,
by that?
There is a great deal of righteous remembering going on, because today is the 25th, or this week is the 25th anniversary of Tiananmen Square.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's this sense of tragedy and shock and horror, really, about the fact that so few people in China remember it.
Or are able to talk about it at all.
Yeah. At all, because you have this central government clampdown.
Yep.
You have a very conscious effort to scrub the internet, to control internet access, to deny people the right to search for it on the web, to never teach it in school, to never mention it anywhere, to just will it out of existence.
Mm-hmm.
And they have almost succeeded. Within China, something like 15 out of 100 college students have any idea what the hell that was.
Yeah.
And they have simply, by sheer force of government power, by central government power, they have made what was an atrocity just go away.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that here.
Yeah.
We don't scrub the internet. You can look up what happened in Iraq all you want. And it wasn't 25 years ago. It wasn't a quarter century ago. This was just the last presidency. This was one presidency ago. All the lies you were told, all of the fraud that was perpetrated on you, all the war crimes that were committed, all of that is just gone now.
Yeah.
No one talks about it. And it isn't as if there's a central government agency in charge of forcing every American citizen to forget. It's that we have a corporate media.
Yeah.
And half the corporate media was directly complicit in the war, profited from the war, profited financially, profited politically by using the fear that Republicans created and used to pimp the wrong war, lies into the wrong war, directly financially benefited from it. And the other half of the corporate media were complicit in it.
Yeah.
Just were well, you know, it's both sides, both sides, both sides. You know, let's be reasonable here. And they were all played. And now, again, all this time later, it should be clear, looking back, what happened. Who was to blame? Who was at fault? Who was right? Who was wrong? But our entire media is now dedicated to never looking back at anything Republicans ever did.
Yeah.
And focusing entirely on Benghazi or Bergdahl or Acorn or whatever. And again, this is, I expect this from Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
The people at Fox News are by and large whores and traitors. They are people who have chosen to wreck this country. They hate the military. They hate this country. They hate their constitution. They hate liberals most of all because we keep remembering shit they used to say. I expect that from them. I expect no better from a bunch of slack-minded, intellectually bereft fascists like Republicans. But the corporate media, the David Gregorys of the world, who let them do it, who continue to rehabilitate their careers, who continue to bring them on stage, the people at CBS who continue to give people like Bill Kristol jobs and never mention the fact that he should be shunned by citizens, they're the ones who are truly to blame for this.
Mm-hmm.
And so James Fallow has this wonderful column today about not the American Tiananmen Square, but what it was like back in the day. It's called Prisoners of Knowledge. And it sounds eerily familiar because it sounds like pretty much everything every liberal I know has written about for a decade or more.
Mm-hmm.
And he does a very good job of recalling, you know, what was it, the mood like in D.C. in the lead up to the invasion? Fallows writes, in my conscious lifetime, it was the most exultantly pro-war that I can recall. The prevailing mood was a William Randolph Hearst type production. It was not just disagreement on the merits of doing this. It was dismissive ridicule of the weakness of the people who weren't with the program.
Mm-hmm.
If you were against a war, it was a sign that you shrank reflexively from the use of force, that you were a symptom of America's long slouch into fearfulness around the world, that you were dismissive of the moral claims of the Kurds or others in Iraq. Period. It was not that you had a genuine disagreement over policy. It's that you were a traitor. You were un-American. And that was the prevailing attitude. That's David Brooks made his fucking career at the New York Times writing slander and slam pieces and sleazy imputations of character of liberals who weren't with the fucking program.
Mm-hmm.
And now 10 years later, it never happened.
Mm-hmm.
David Brooks gets to keep his house and his job and his paycheck and his glory and his lecture tours and all that shit. It doesn't matter that he was wrong. It doesn't matter at all that he was wrong. He gets to keep it all and keep right on rolling, because if we ever were to stop and turn around and look at who was right and who was wrong, pretty much 4/5 of the American media would be unemployed. And Fox News, half those people would be in jail. And so there is a collective desire to never look back, because it's bad for business for everybody. And so the last thing James Fallows, one of the last things he writes in this article, and I'll just leave it at this because I like James Fallows. He's a really good writer. And I met him once, which is exciting to me. The question was, should we all be holding unchastened hawks to more account? And his answer is, there is no non-asshole way to keep pointing out, hey, you're saying we should go to war now. What about a dozen years ago?
Yeah.
You just become a nag if you say that. And I would point out is that there was a time when liberals were ignored during the run-up to war.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when liberals were ignored during the conduct of the war. There was a time when liberals were ignored as it all started to fall apart. Mm-hmm. There was a time when liberals were ignored. It was really clear that they were right all along. There was this brief moment where Marcos Melitzas got to go and meet the press one time. To say, maybe you were right. And then we just swept it all under the rug and forgot about it.
Yep.
And we did it voluntarily. We did it to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no one left in this country, other than a few dirty, disreputable bloggers and a handful of people on MSNBC, who will remind the country what really happened and who's really to blame for why we are what we are.
Well, and one of the reasons I think we need to continue to be a nag, at least for the next, forever.
Yeah.
is people are coming up into political awareness now.
Yeah.
And they need to be taught the history, the verbal history of what really happened.
Yeah.
Before they came to adulthood. And we've had letters from a number of people saying, you know, like our listener earlier in this podcast, I was in second grade when Clinton was impeached. I was in second grade when 9/11 happened. But my children were not born yet, except for one of them. The oldest was two when 9/11 happened. And I remember that because I was going through infertility. I was on my way to the infertility doc on 9/11. That's where I was going for baby number two. So young people deserve to have the truth available to them.
Yeah.
And as I said, we do not have equal time with Sean Hannity.
No, and we never will.
In our corporate media. So it does pay to be loud and nasty about it in a pleasant way.
Into line with Ted Cruz.
Yes. Ted Cruz, who says Democrats don't like the First Amendment. We want to silence environmental groups.
Yeah.
Apparently, because we don't want them to spend money on politics.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And Ted Cruz, who actually said that Ray Bradbury would be astonished. Well, he'd be astonished because he's dead. So that would in fact shock him. But he would be astonished that the Democrat Party, I think he's talking about us, Blue Gal.
Yeah.
Because we're seeing Fahrenheit 451 Democrats today. Because Democrats are all about allowing critics to use the Constitution to ban books and films, and likened it to the repeal of the First Amendment, and invoked a novel about book burning.
Mm-hmm.
Because burning books is exactly the same as saying there shouldn't be an infinite amount of unaccountable dark money being poured into the political system by plutocrats. Right. Yeah, those two are exactly the same.
Yeah.
And my point was he got the author right. He just got the book wrong.
What book should he been quoting from?
I thought about this and I thought about it twice. The first one should have been A Sound of Thunder.
Oh.
Which is the classic Ray Bradbury story in which...
Everybody take a drink.
Everybody get ready to take a second drink.
Okay.
The Sound of Thunder is Ray Bradbury's classic story where someone during an election year, there's an election year and the good guy wins.
Oh, okay.
And there's a thing called Time Safari Incorporated, and you can travel back in time and kill a Tyrannosaurus Rex. You can kill a Bengal tiger in the 1500s. You can kill anything you want because they've gone back in time and figured out when that animal is going to die anyway.
Oh,
so
it doesn't affect long-term history, butterfly killing.
So they put this long anti-gravity path out in front of you so you touch nothing.
Yeah.
And then you walk down the path and because you're a bloodthirsty asshole who has to kill every apex predator in history, you walk down the path and you kill whatever the hell it was going to die anyway. Mm-hmm. And then you go back to the machine and you can say, I killed the T-Rex. Yay. But don't step off the path.
Ah.
And in our story, of course, one of the people, because it has to be, because it wouldn't be dramatic otherwise, freaks out, steps off the path, steps on a butterfly, mm-hmm. comes back to the future, and Ted Cruz is the senator from fucking Texas. So I'm convinced we are living in someone else's science fiction story about, you shouldn't tamper with history, dude. You imagine?
Look what happens. Ted Cruz becomes a U.S. senator.
Yeah. And who's going to run for president? That's what we shouldn't have stepped on the butterfly.
And he won a straw poll.
He did. But the second story, and this goes directly to what liberals do. I know I've used this story before. I'm going to use it again shamelessly. It's a story called To the Chicago Abyss, mm-hmm. Which is a melancholy, beautiful, melancholy story by Ray Bradbury. About an old man who the Chicago Abyss is the crater next to Lake Michigan where Chicago used to be mm-hmm. after a nuclear war. It's after some tremendous devastation, a tremendous nuclear war. Everyone is starving. They're fighting over canned vegetables. They're hanging on by their nails to survive. And this is the guy who sort of rides buses or rides public transit. He goes from place to place. And he can't help himself. Mm-hmm. He talks about the way things used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
He talks about...
mentioned this before.
He talks about candy bars and fresh oranges and how the dashboard of a Chrysler looked. And people hate him for it. Mm-hmm. Because it's just a reminder of how bad things are now. And he's about to be... he's beaten up by some guys and he's about to be thrown in jail. And he's smuggled out of the city into a small group of people who want him to tell the story of how things used to be. And they scrape together enough money to send him west, I think. It's been a long time since I read it. But his job, because he can't help himself, his job is to just tell the truth, to tell how things really used to be and remind people that he doesn't want to hurt them. He doesn't want to make them sad. He wants to remind them that we could be this way again. Mm-hmm. We could have a country where Ted Cruz is laughed off the stage instead of becoming a U.S. senator. We could have a country where Michelle Bachmann is a joke at a supermarket, is handing out samples at Walmart, not a congressperson. We could have that country back. We sort of used to have that. It sort of used to be a place where, as bad as things were, outright fucking lunatics, anti-science lunatics, didn't actually run a major political party.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com.
We're going to switch gears and talk about one last thing, the EPA regulations. And do you want to say anything, too, about Chicago and the governor's race and the Neighborhood Recovery Initiative? Can you give us a 50-cent tour of what that is about? Because it's going to come up in national news, guaranteed.
Sure. Once upon a time, there was a thing called Neighborhood Recovery Initiative. It was a 50-something million-dollar program to do intervention in some of Chicago's worst neighborhoods.
With high-risk youth.
Mm-hmm. It was...
at risk. I'm sorry. The term is at risk youth.
Mm-hmm. Youth who are heading into the criminal justice system, youth who are already in the criminal justice system. And it was the idea that you sort of throw a lot of resources, a lot of well-coordinated programs and resources into tough neighborhoods and sort of break up and disperse the danger points and get them into job training, get them into education, get gang intervention, get them mentors, wrap a lot of services around them and a lot of hope around them. And so forth, which is a fine idea. You can't disagree with that at the 50,000 foot level. You can't disagree with that. But it was horrifically mismanaged. It was And it look, and you could tell, I got involved in this program as a contract person, as part of a job I was doing. And I just got dropped into the middle of it. I had nothing to do with negotiating it. I wasn't there when it ended.
How did it turn out? What happened in the end?
It was a disaster. It was a complete waste of money. They had no I'm quoting now from the newspaper, from the I think the auditor's report. They said a significant number of internal control weaknesses, instances of noncompliance and grant awarding, administrative and monitoring, including missing documents, incomplete, untimely application, untimely, incomplete monitoring reports, lacking approval dates, lack of site visits, unapproved budget allocations, untimely recovery of unspent grant funds, and on and on and on and on and on. It was a mess. And the thing was, when I got dropped into this thing, I had been a project manager before. I've run big projects before. I could tell from the ground level this thing was screwed up badly. Mm-hmm. And it was going in the wrong direction at 100 miles an hour because all they cared about were the deadlines.
Yeah.
They were completely uninterested in the fact that apparently they were just pulling crap off the shelf. Every project anybody had ever had was now going to be funded all at once under one tent. So everybody was pulling off every half-baked idea they had and throwing it at the wall and saying, the collective thing that is this big pile of stuff is the project.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they were obsessed with, you know, deadlines and dates and spending
getting the money.
Getting the money and spending the money. Getting the money and spending the money. And they were really, really obsessed with that. And I can understand why, but dude, you don't have a project. You don't have any vision for a project. The 2-day training that we were supposed to be on turned into a 6-week training.
Mm-hmm.
And it was everything you could imagine. And for me on the ground, it was interesting to see. It was interesting and lots of good information, but it was a mess. The forms we were supposed to fill out were shot through with typos.
Mm-hmm.
Simple things like, here's a form you fill out for someone, and I'm looking through this thing going, yeah, but these options are mutually exclusive, and this one doesn't work, and you've left off something here, and, well, yeah, I just typed this up last night, so there's going to be problems, but we'll fix it later.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, oh, man, really? Because everything was like that. Everything was last minute thrown together in a hurry, just
because there's money there.
And
there's money, and then there's a program after the money's there. Yeah.
And we have been starving these programs for years.
Yeah.
And now we're going to dump a big pot of money into it, and it was a mess. It was a mess from the start, and anybody on the ground could have told you that it was going to be a screw up. And it was a screw up. And now, of course, we have a governor's race in Illinois, and we have a governor's race that's going to be the most expensive race in Illinois history. And it's going to be
because a billionaire is running a Scott Walker campaign against the unions.
Yeah. And he has
a Republican.
And he has an infinite amount of money
of his own.
Of his own.
Yeah.
And the Republican National Gubernatorial Committee has targeted Illinois. The Democratic Gubernatorial Committee has targeted. So it's going to be a ton of money coming from outside. And this is one of the big black eyes that Pat Quinn has. This was his program.
It's one of the few, actually.
Yeah. But it's big. And it's a genuine, honest-to-God scandal. And it makes me so mad on so many levels.
Mm-hmm.
First, because it was a complete waste of taxpayer money. Secondly, because it was something that should have been done. Yeah. This is something that should have been done.
These kids who need to stay out of prison is a good thing to do. Yeah.
And third, if they'd had anyone in charge who had half a brain, who knew what they were doing, it would not have been a disaster. Yeah. And now you have a bipartisan group of people who don't want the stink on them, on themselves during an election year, saying, you know what?
Right.
This was a disaster. Now a legislative committee of the state government has gotten a hold of it, as well they should.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to, I hope, kick ass, take names, and fire some people.
Yeah.
But it was completely unnecessary.
And the fact that there's this one area of state government that had a fuck up.
Yep.
It's absolutely true.
Uh-huh.
Was a fuck up.
It was.
Does not mean that we give this state and its government to Scott Walker too.
No. It's perfectly okay to be of two minds about.
Yeah, on two minds on that. And it is perfectly okay to be of two minds on that.
Yes, the people involved in this project should be flogged. But turning it over, privatizing your government, and handing it over to a Scott Walker billionaire to shred unions and cut the hell out of taxes and bankrupt the government.
No, he's already said he wants to cut taxes again. Yeah,
is not
for rich people. Yep.
Yeah, the alternative when you have a broken arm, the alternative is not, hey, you know what I need now? A head wound.
Yeah.
But those are your two choices. You go with the Democratic government you have now, which is doing something very clever with the budget, which I think I mentioned in the previous podcast.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about that. They passed an unbalanced budget.
They passed the spending portion, but not the paying for it portion.
Mm.
And that made everybody very upset because, like on a Tuesday, they said, oh, don't worry, everything's in place. The next day, Mike Madigan says, well, like,
forget it.
It can't be done. It's impossible to do. And the wise thinking around this is that Madigan doesn't know if Pat Quinn's going to win or not. He probably won't. We might very well end up with a Republican governor. And
then it's his problem.
Well, then he doesn't want to. He doesn't want to let this guy run on how dare the tax and spend liberals raise taxes, and then have that money at his disposal if he wins.
Yeah.
You don't get to have it both ways. No. If you want to make
hard decisions, that's Chris Christie. Yeah, that's what that is.
So what he's saying is, look, we'll pass the spending portion. After the election, we'll go after the tax portion.
Mm-hmm.
If the Republicans win, let them cut the budget. Let them be the people who look at school kids in the eye and tell them, you don't get to go to school. You don't get school lunch programs. You don't get Medicare. You don't get Medicaid. We're going to cut. Let them take the hit for it. Or if Democrats win, we'll raise your taxes to pay for all the things that we want, that you want, that are good, bad, or indifferent. But don't give people who are out to rip you off and destroy you and beat you at the polling place a blank check to spend on your back after the election's over.
Yep.
So anyway.
And I want to stick with local news for one more moment.
Yeah, sure.
And talk about our specific congressman, John Shimkus.
Yeah.
I found out, Driftglass.
Yeah.
He's a member of the Congressional Coal Caucus. The Congressional Coal Caucus is an actual thing.
Oh, my God. Really?
I'm not making that up.
Is it Clean Coal Caucus or just
No,
coal caucus?
It's Congressional Coal Caucus.
Hmm.
The Coal Caucus is a real live thing.
That's good to know.
It's currently made up of 67 Republicans and 6 Democrats.
Yeah.
And it's not just Democrats abandoning the coal caucus, but actually coal state voters are circling the wagons and trying to cling to the Republican Party to keep their dirty fuel, our dirty fuel. And Southern Illinois is a huge source of coal.
It is.
This podcast is powered by coal and to a large extent. I don't want to pretend that we're not dealing with this at home, but it's dirty energy. There is no such thing as clean coal. And we need to do something about carbon emissions. And the president has done something about carbon emissions.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Shimkus is, of course, being one of the largest recipients of coal money in the Congress and a member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Did you know that, Driftglass?
I could have guessed that, but I did not know it for sure. I would have predicted.
He's sent us a newsletter. He sent me a newsletter saying that this EPA regulation will cost us billions.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder who us is, first of all.
I don't know. Not me. I don't have my billions in my other pants, I think.
He is going to be seeking answers regarding the Obama administration's climate change agenda, and it's promised that the committee will continue its robust oversight of the EPA.
Yeah. That's good to know.
Yeah. And I love the political cartoon that came out this week because Shimkus's newsletter mentioned, we're not even sure this will affect climate change. That's the next lie. First of all, climate change doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's, but anything you do isn't really going to affect it. Isn't really going to help climate change.
So
cleaning up the planet for nothing.
Well,
what this cartoon said.
This is the logic of smoking.
Yeah.
This was always... Always the logic behind big tobacco, which was cigarettes are not bad for you. That's a lie. Cigarettes are actually good for you. And then it was, well, cigarettes may or may not be bad for you, but there's a controversy because we have some scientists and they have some scientists. And who knows? And the third was, but it's not about your health. It's about freedom.
Freedom.
And then the fourth was, look, you're going to die anyway. So might as well fuck it. It's too late now. Might as well keep smoking.
And in Virginia, it was about jobs.
Yeah.
And this is exactly, Shimkus says, it's going to affect the local economy so badly. And apparently we have to, this is what amazes me, and I understand these economies are fragile and people may have good paying jobs in the coal industry. I understand why they're scared.
Yep.
Our planet needs to be cleaned up. The air, clean air is the most important thing. Clean water, clean air, clean air. I keep saying this, clean air, clean water, clean air, clean water. And apparently, there is an effort on the part of this president and other presidents to try to balance out investment in alternative energies into areas that are most affected by coal.
Yeah.
By walking away from coal. But we didn't do that with the auto industry in Detroit. We didn't decide, we really ought to move some other industries into Michigan to make this happen. I don't believe we did that to make it easier for people to survive, to the city of Detroit to survive. We didn't do that. And apparently because I strongly believe it's because of the color of the people involved. We see investment in white people and white industries and industries where white people are working to be worthy of salvation. and other people are not. And that's,
well, we were, remember, we, when we switched from a demand side to a supply side economy under, let's see, who was that president? Oh yeah, Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
We weren't going to need those jobs anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because everything was going to be so cheap and everything was going to be so plentiful that we were all going to get rich.
It was going to trickle down.
It was going to trickle down. If we just keep pumping more money into the top 1%, everyone's going to get rich.
Yeah.
And it turned out not so much. Now, again, we're playing the forgetting game. The that what? No, that was never something, something. That, ooh, look over there, Benghazi. I would like to add one more thing to the climate change debate.
Yep.
Just one more item.
Okay, go ahead.
I would like to read this paragraph from a noted blogger, from perhaps the world's most famous blogger.
Ah, go right ahead. I know who that, I can guess who that is.
It is a mournful and angry column about how fucked up and crazy the Republican Party has become. When a figure as respected on the right as Charles Krauthammer has been reduced to claiming that no reigning scientific theory should be taken seriously because it might want to be adjusted in light of new data experiments, this is what happens when reason becomes anathema to one hermetically sealed party. Okay, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
It matters when one party refuses to accept reality, when it refuses to grasp the fact you cannot raise revenue by cutting taxes, that the United States practice torture, or that human-made climate change is real. When one side engages in a surreal debate, the country becomes incapable of engaging in any real debate. Now, this is the part I want you to listen very carefully to. I know we've become used to this, and the press has found a way to write about the GOP as if they were not a reckless, know-nothing postmodern fantasy machine. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't remain capable of shock and anger at this pathetic excuse for a political party. And the blogger is Andrew Sullivan, and my question is, who the fuck is this we we're talking about?
Yeah.
Liberals have been doing this since Reagan tried and succeeded in seducing people like Andrew Sullivan to becoming his dupe and his stooge. Yep. So, and the one thing Andrew Sullivan will never, ever be able to form his mouth to say is that liberals were right all along.
Mm-hmm. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week there are two internet kitties, Angus and Fergus. And they are no relation to Mel Gibson or his blue-painted face. Not at all. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. A side note, I wanted to thank all the atheists and non-believers who have expressed love for Bible Bitch.
Bible Bitch.
That's not scriptural. In the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Thank you. You guys are awesome. Feel free to write us. We do love hearing from you at all times, even when we're really, really busy with kids. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Thank you all for listening and for your generous financial support. We deeply appreciate all of you.
We do.
Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, the Internet Kitties are gearing up for their annual listen to Alice Cooper's Scooze Out for Summer.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey dovin'. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Thank you, Dog-Faced Herman. We're back to Science Fiction University this week. And this one has a theme, Driftglass.
Yes.
Dog-Faced Herman says it's women in science fiction movies. I would say it's mostly about sexism in science fiction movies. But, you know, there is that. And so let's listen to these.
Okay.
But brace yourselves and trigger warning if need be on some of these. It's some of these are pretty bad. I'm just gonna say it. Okay, number one.
You are now inside a flying saucer. Our destination, the planet Earth. Our race is old, dying. Our planet dead. Only you of Earth, you and your women, can give us life. And what we want, we take.
I have no idea. I'm good. I'm tempted to say Mars Needs Women, but I know that can't be it.
No. It's 1957's The Mysterians.
Oh, The Mysterians.
And Dogface Herman says, most wars are fought over resources. I guess that means women are a resource like coal. Yes, indeed. All right.
Well, that was, as I recall, a Japanese movie.
Oh, okay.
Dubbed into English.
Oh, well, they dubbed it with a lot of verve, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they sure did.
Okay, number two.
What strange erotic force was taking hold of the women of Peckham, California? What changed them from everyday housewives into ravishingly beautiful women?
Whoever there are, all the victims have been men. They've all died, apparently, by overexhaustion in the act of sexual intercourse.
Well, let me tell you something. Me, for one, ain't gonna give up a little pleasure I get from screwing my old lady, or anybody else, for that matter.
Abstinence isn't gonna be anything new around here.
Well, if I were positive it was going to kill you, I'd do it.
The United States government sent their top investigator to Peckham to try and stop this sex-driven epidemic.
But you were the last person to see him alive on the night he was murdered.
All right. You might as well know. We bawled, and we bawled, and we bawled till he dropped dead.
Is there a man in your town who can satisfy... Rated R from Sequoia Pictures.
I also have no idea.
This one is called The Invasion of the Bee Girls, B-E-E, as in the insect.
I can guess that it was in the 70s.
It was 1973, that's right.
Yeah, mid-70s. It had that sort of leisure suit vibe to it. But, I know people who had leisure suits. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some of my best friends had leisure suits.
Number three.
You know, I didn't say anything to the Queen. I didn't want to put her on guard. But I'm beginning to think our being here isn't an accident.
Oh, come off it. How could a bunch of women invent a gizmo like that?
Sure, and even if they invented it, how could they aim it? You know how women drivers are.
Oh, Lord.
That sounds like Leslie Nielsen.
It's the queen of something. It has to be the queen of something, but I don't know what.
The Queen of Outer Space.
The Queen of Outer Space. I knew there was one.
1958.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, so basically nothing in the last 40 years. All right.
Number four. And number four, trigger warning.
Okay.
Colonel, I'm sending Major Moore as your co-pilot.
Bill Moore? Oh, no, General, you can't.
And why not?
The big lug hates me. He's jealous of me. No, you'll have to pick someone else.
Now, you listen to me, Bright Eyes.
Bright Heist, if you please.
Shut up, Bright Eyes, and listen to me. Major Moore's the best pilot we have, better than you are.
But I don't understand
Pipe
why you...
Pipe down! If he'd weighed 90 pounds instead of 180, he'd be a colonel and a public hero, and you'd still be a captain. But you got the orbital flight. You got the ticker tape parades and all the rest. And ever since, you've been too big for your britches. Get me?
No, I don't.
One. Colonels don't say no to generals. Two, you're not a superwoman, you're a spoiled brat. Three, any more guff out of you and I'll turn you over my knee and spank you.
If you do, I'll shout the whole place down.
I might add that this room is soundproof.
You wouldn't dare.
You want to try me?
No. No, sir.
Oh, I have no idea. It sounds like the giant claw. I know there was...
It's from 1953. It's called Project Moonbase.
Oh.
And this scene was penned by Robert Heinlein and Jack Seaman.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Jack Seaman. Jack Seaman is apparently someone's real name.
Yeah, so. S-E-A-M-A-N. Okay. Yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It does sound like a joke thrown in there. Okay. Number five is a well-known movie.
Once a normal, voluptuously beautiful woman, she drove into a nightmare of horror and saw descending from the sky a titanic monster whose fearsome touch became a frightful curse.
Oh, yeah, this is in the Attack of the 50-Foot Lady.
Woman, yes.
Woman, yes.
1958. Yeah. Don't get her mad.
Don't get her mad.
All right, and number six.
This is Orson Welles speaking. I have 45 seconds to tell you about something I think you'll remember the longest day you live. It's about a man named Scott Carey. A few months ago, he was 6 feet 2 inches tall and weighed 190 pounds. Today, he's 2 inches tall and you can hold him in the palm of your hand.
Oh, that's The Incredible Shrinking Man.
A
very fine movie for its time.
Which predated The 50-Foot Woman by one year, by the way.
Well, there was also Colossus, Attack of the 50-Foot Colossus. Yeah. There were two movies starring... Pilot Glenn Manning runs out for some reason, I forget what, probably to save someone's life during a nuclear test. And he is hit with radiation.
Oh.
And he begins to grow and grow and grow and grow. And then he loses his mind and, you know, becomes destructive. And I think he does something bad to Hoover Dam, or nearly does. Uh-huh. But that one actually had a sequel. They basically killed him, dumped him off a dam, as I recall. You know, he picked up buses, he threw them around. But they made a sequel. They basically messed his face up, made him look like Two-Face a little bit. You know, skeletal on one half of his face, and brought him back.
Wow.
So the giant and shrinking themes were big.
Yeah,
so,
well, that was a special effect that you could actually
do.
Create. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And number seven is an actress talking about a famous role that she acted in.
I think what attracted me was that she, first of all, is a character that was written as a man. So it was written in a very straightforward way. This was a kind of direct person who didn't have these scenes where she was suddenly vulnerable, and she didn't, you know, throw her hands up and wait for someone else to save her. She was a thinking, moving, deciding creature. And I think that's the other thing that interested me, was that she went from someone who sort of believed that the world was a certain way to someone who couldn't believe in anything anymore.
Oh, that's Sigourney Weaver in
Yes,
Alien.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
The badass Lieutenant Ripley.
And thank you, Dogface Herman. He said, I really wanted to end this on a good note. Yeah. And I understand that.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is a very powerful, strong, ultimately maternal role.
Yeah.
Where, you know, she's protecting a child,
yeah,
but still badass and strong and not wimpy and not taken advantage of. Yeah.
If you think of any captain taking care of his or her crew,
yeah,
is a very parental role.
It is, yeah.
And looking after them at all costs, making sure that, you know, everyone is safe at all costs, is the job of any leader.
Yep.
So, yeah, Sigourney Weaver kicked ass. That was really, I did like Aliens better than Alien. I like the whole Giger look of the first movie, but the second one really got me hooked.
All right. Thank you very much, Dogface Herman, and we'll be back next week either with TV or sci-fi. We don't know which, but
yeah,
we'll be back. We have some very well-behaved children in this house right now.
The last day of school. I think my mom said what I think her mother told her, which was, it doesn't matter how many kids you have, they all use up 150% of your time.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter. You're going to be like this for a long time. But it is three different schools on three different schedules. So we're basically, we slipped in here to our secret mountain lair where we record our podcast, literally between two kid-based appointments
picking ups, yep,
very closely timed together. So yep. Plus, we're going to have a lot of company over and sleepover, so we're busy.
Sleepover. It's sleepover time now. The school's out. Yeah.
So we're putting the house into sleepover mode while we're doing all this other stuff.
Yeah.
So pardon our...
Whatever. Pardon everything. And best parenting advice I ever got. Just make them the center of your life.
Yeah.
That's
done.
That's it. Done. Okay.
All right.
And thank you, Drift Class.
My pleasure, as always.
Bye.
Bye.